Hey everyone, check this out. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com. You guys all know this. I love entrepreneurs. Largely, I read biographies of entrepreneurs the way other people watch movies for fun. So that's partially why I do these interviews. I also do them because I know my audience of entrepreneurs are listening, learning, and building their businesses. But check this out. I've got Macs all over the frickin' place, and iPhones and iPads, and they all come with Keynote for creating presentations for free. I didn't have to pay for it. Created by the company that's one of the best design firms in the planet, right? One of the best software creators in the planet. And I'm not the only one, obviously, right? A lot of you are listening to me, and you could say the same thing. You've got Keynote. And if you don't, you've got, what's the other one? What's the Microsoft version? Why am I not thinking of that?
I can't remember what it's called. PowerPoint.
PowerPoint, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it exists. And still, the guy whose voice you just heard, Payman Tai, says, I'm getting into this space. And he did. He created a company, totally bootstrapped, no outside funding. It's all him putting his money on the line, his time on the line. He created a company called VizMe. They are a visual design tool that allows you to create presentations, infographics, and other visual content. So in a way, he's competing against big guys like Keynote. And frankly, in the other spaces, the infographic creation and the ebook creation, all that, there are other big guys competing with him too. In ebooks, Payman, Apple also has an entrant, right?
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
And still, he's got a business that's going strong, and I invited him here to find out how he did it. How is he creating VizMe into this online tool that's competing really well with all the big guys? All right. This interview where we find out about how he did it is sponsored by two companies. The first will help you host your website, right? It's called HostGator. And the second will help you hire your next phenomenal developer. It's called TopTal. Payman, revenue-wise, how much are you guys bringing in?
Great question. So that is one of the things that we really don't close because we are a private company. But I will leave it at that. We are profitable. We became profitable about a year after we launched our paid version. And we are well over a million users and growing.
Over a million in revenue, right?
We're over a million users, but we are over that revenue, but I can't disclose exactly what the numbers
are. You're just saying over a million in revenue. You're saying that.
We are
profitable. How profitable? Hundreds of thousands a year?
Yeah, we're definitely above that. But again, remember that we have a very high profit margin and gross margin. But again, we invest heavily into the future of the tool.
So when we say that it's hundreds of thousands, does that mean you're taking out of the business and putting it into something?
We reinvest a lot back into the business, but we still do a walk away with profit as well. I do believe, I guess, you know, because of the type of business that we're on, being bootstrapped and so on, you always got to have some for the rainy days. So we definitely, you know, have and well reserved in that area.
Where do you put your rainy day money? I do for Mixergy, and like it turns out, four or five freaking different bank accounts. Because if you put your money in a Citibank bank account, which I did when I opened up my company in Santa Monica, then you go to DC, they treat you like you're with a whole other company. So I opened up one in Citibank in DC. Here in San Francisco, they don't recognize. So then I opened up another one. Then I said, screw all these guys, I'm going to Chase. So now I got a whole other one. What do you do? That's no way to be.
Well, there's different, you know, there's multiple accounts, and you know, cash only gives you so much return, right?
Right. So I take you for a real estate guy.
Yeah, there is real estate involved, but it's more REIT. I mean, it's more REIT based that I.
You invest in REITs, real estate investment trusts.
Yeah, exactly. Those, because again, you know, it's hands off. I like hands off stuff because I'm pretty hands on. You know, VizMe, that is right. A huge amount of effort. And
publicly traded REITs, or are you talking about like friend of a friend?
No, we're talking about both. Yeah, I've invested in both. Talking about, you know, there's platforms such as, you know, Fundrise, Realty Mogul, and then there is the actual, you know, ones that I was introduced to through colleagues and others that
you use Realty Mogul too?
I am actually looking into that. I haven't invested into that, but I have been in Fundrise.
I interviewed the founder of Realty Mogul. I love the idea. I don't know why I just haven't gotten into it.
There is, you know, they're almost a, it's almost like a subcontractor in essence, right? I forgot what the term is, but, you are going through a sponsor, and the sponsors, you have to really, weigh them out as far as if they're, you know, they're right fit or not, because there is some bad deals that come out of those.
Even through Realty Mogul.
Possibly. Yeah, there could be a possibility. I haven't experienced it, but I had talked, they said, you know, there are cases that happens. They're rare, but as with any investment, right, you have to really do your due diligence.
Here's why I bring this up. I had no idea how many people in tech, how many people in software were investing in real estate and other things like that on the side. It's just interesting. And it's the bootstrappers. The bootstrappers, they're taking money out. They want a little bit of security. They want some diversification. They're always freaking out because nobody's got their back. So they want to make sure that if all goes away, they still have something. And you're a guy, frankly, who came from like a family where you could see that things could go away. Your dad was an entrepreneur?
Yes.
I grew up with a dad who was an entrepreneur. I would never draw on my loose leaf binders because I was always worried the business would go away and I'd have to use my same loose leaf binder the following year. And if people saw that it was the same drawings, they would know that I was a loser, which was like, I don't know how I got that in my head. Did you grow up with that at all?
So there's two sides. I mean, my dad, you know, small business owner, not a big business owner, and so on, small business owner. So I've kind of firsthand saw the challenges that comes up with that. Even I would say, I don't want to say mistakes, but, you know, certain things that you don't do, they can affect you. And actually, I experienced that firsthand at my agency, which is how Vismi came about, a web agency that I started. So I even...
Oh, yeah. We're going to get into what happened there and why.
Yeah. So there. On my mother's side, you know, she's very traditional in that go to school, get your degree. And when I actually started designing websites out of college to kind of pay my way through college, she was like, why the heck you... starting a web design company and just go be a web designer for someone else. And you make, you know, X amount of dollars per month. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. But right now I'm making this little, but down the road, you know, it could generate, but it's what I like doing, you know. But, you know, now, I mean, that's all turned around as far as, you know, seeing the big picture. But my dad was the opposite. I mean, he was like, you know, just go, you know, if you really believe in something, just go for it. So as long as it doesn't hurt other people.
Your dad had a business that resold computers.
Yes.
And one of the things that you took away from that was you have to evolve. Why did you take that lesson? What was it about his business that left you with that?
Well, you know, Dell came along, right? Dell and some others came out. So they basically almost eliminated the majority of the resellers, and the rates of the pricing of the computers hardware drastically came down. I mean, there was a, you know, Pentium computer that used to go for $5,000. I mean, now you can buy, you know, three Macs for that. So, you know, things have changed drastically.
Because the way it used to work is resellers would buy computers, keep it in their showroom, be consultants, help people buy the computer and take it home right there. Dell said, screw all that. People can call us up, tell us what they want, then wait a few days while we make the computer and ship it out to them. But in return for that wait, we will customize something to them and sell it to them at rock bottom prices. How do you compete with something like that? Okay, so you took a lesson from that. You then still went out and became your own man, your own entrepreneur. You started a company called Hindsight Interactive back in 2001.
Correct.
The nerve on you after the .com explosion, you get into this, but you were a student at the time.
Yeah, it was literally right before that, you know, that I started doing things. And it was just a way, paying my way through college. I always liked design. I used to play with a little animation programs. I can't remember the name of it before whole Adobe Flash and so on. And so I kind of, you know, played with it and gave up on it after a while. Just, you know, I got into bodybuilding and weight training, and I was like, okay, how do I put the two and two together? I guess sports medicine is the way to go, because I didn't want to be a physical therapist. I don't want to be a lawyer, an attorney, and so on. Then, you know, I was like, okay, I like nutrition. So I got into that. Therefore, I went to general biology. Long story short, by the time it was my bachelor's degree time, I was like, that's seven more years of school. I'm not the type that wants to, not that I was doing bad in school, I just don't have the patience to go another 6 or 7 years in residency. There's so much more I could do. And so that's when the whole internet thing was taking off. And I started actually a little tiny coupon business where I went door to door to businesses and said, I had like $100 in the bank. I had nothing, you know, in my name. And went in and say, hey, I'll create a little coupon webpage for you. And it'll be like $99 a year. And nobody wanted it, except one guy got back to me via phone call because I sent some flyers out and said, I want a website. And I said, no, I don't do that. I create one page coupons. And he's like, no, I need a 5-6 page website. So, you know, I was like, okay, it's going to be $1,000. Long story short, that's how it started. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't go to school for design, self-taught myself. And over, you know, all that period, I learned how to do it. And little by little, somebody else wanted it. And so I formed it into a little tiny web design agency, which grew to about, 10, 12 people at the peak of it.
It's still going on, right?
It's still going on. I still have it, and it still actually is close to that. It's a tiny little bit smaller. It's under, 7 or 8 people now, because so much of my focus is on VizMe. But I still run that because a lot of the creative work that we still do is actually done by some of my designer and assets at Hindsight. So we're on the same office, same location, and we're able to, tack into different resources as needed. But that's how, the way Hindsight led to VizMe was that the whole...
Wait, before we get into that, let's talk about that issue that you addressed earlier, which is you were kind of dependent on one thing and then the world changed. And that one thing was Flash.
Flash, it was. So
why did you create pages for companies in Flash? I remember when restaurants all had Flash sites and none of us could understand why.
Looking back, I kind of laugh at it, but it was then when people saw things moving around and when sound effects and you go to this homepage, and again, it took like 30 seconds, 40 seconds on the DSL,
to load.
Yeah. And you had all this stuff going on and it wasn't about user experience for most people then. And I was guilty of it. It's all about interactivity, motion. So, a lot of companies or businesses would look at it and say, I want my site to look like this competitor. I want it to be better. Because if people look at it, they're going to like it more. And everybody got onto that bandwagon where, most of the sites you went to, they had a little Flash intro. So we did a bunch of stuff. 2008 elections for ABC News. We did create all these modules for the elections. And it was great stuff that we did. And then literally right after that, I can't recall exactly when it was, 2009, 2010 or so. And then, of course, Flash, Apple stopped supporting Flash, and literally in a matter of 6 months to a year. And that's also when WordPress was starting to become more popular, and we had done none of that. People and companies, they just didn't want the sites in Flash, and our whole portfolio was pretty much Flash based, right? So it was pretty damaging and revenue went down and, it was pretty, gruesome. And so it kind of lessens back to my dad's business and seeing the evolution of things just change constantly. And so that's what we did, was to, go into the, I'm sorry about that.
No, into okay. The it's my phones.
Yeah. It's my Bluetooth kicking in, which is very odd. Let me just turn that off. And
I'm surprised when anyone even has volume turned on their phones. You don't keep it on vibrate?
Actually, it is on vibrate. It is on mute, but it's my laptop that takes over.
And even though because it's Bluetoothing on. In. By the way, how Flash based you are is I went to the Internet Archive to see what Hindsight looked like back in the day. There's only one image I could see on the whole site. It's the button that says get Adobe Flash Player.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the
it chopped your business. Apple said no more Flash. That meant other sites, other people didn't want to create in Flash. Took away the majority of your business, not all of it. You still had some. All right, so then take me to how you ended up with VizMe. What's the thing, the impetus?
Sure. So the way that came about was, I've kind of found a little, there's this little bridge that I noticed, because when we were doing websites with people, people would say, I want to edit my website. And so they need a do-it-yourself tool. And then on the other hand, we had other people who needed a custom solution. So, the reality is that for custom solutions, like when you want to create a presentation and so on, majority of the people are going to hire, they don't want to hire a professional. They don't have the budget for it, right? So they sometimes want to do it on their own. So today you look at most people, they create their own PowerPoint, and once in a while there is this opportunity and they need something very high end, and therefore they hire someone to do that. So that's where I saw a vision. I was like, you know what? That is probably what we're going to do. That's where we could lead to. However, before that, there was something else. I looked at it when Flash was going down the road. I said, let's do a little experiment, not for money or anything, just for see if we can actually do it. Flash is going out the door. I love design. I love animation. Let's create a tool that's animation based, that's based on HTML5, that is for designers. So it's got a time. It was literally like Flash, animation, timeline, everything. So we spent about 9 months or so internally putting that together, launched a little beta. For about 600-700 users, to come try it out. And we noticed soon that they really don't care about it. They are actually trying to put together a little slide deck, or they're trying to do something that looks like almost like a one-page.
You said Flash is going away. because the technology isn't being supported by phones, let's create something that creates a flashlight-like experience using HTML5 so nobody could take it away. You created it, you looked, nobody cared about anything other than creating presentations.
Yeah, it wouldn't say, it was, I think that the most of the people, the way we actually put out the beta, it wasn't so much adhering to all designers. A lot of them were non-designers as well, so they could care less about the animation or, you know, timeline, and it was very complicated, right? So that's kind of where, which I'm glad that that was a mistake that we didn't really target it towards the designers, because things would have turned out a little bit differently. You know, we would have kept going, potentially in that route. So very quickly, even though the product was very buggy, it wasn't, you know, well put together, it quickly was a way to see that, hey, there's a bigger opportunity out there. So, you know, it was very quick. A light bulb went off and I said, all right, you know what? This can actually should be a tool for non-designers, for everyone, not just for the very, very small percentage of people that happen to be designers, which are going to continue using advanced tools like Adobe product line.
What was the tool that eventually led you to this conclusion? What's the website for that?
As far as what the,
I want to go back and look at that website of the product that had, that was trying to reproduce Flash.
Oh, well, it was called, it's not even around anymore. That was us trying to recreate it, right? That was us. So Vizme became what it is today. So that product doesn't really exist anymore.
It was Vizme.co.
It was at the point at that time, we call it Presenter. We call it Presenter. The name change that came along because I wanted to come up with a name that is unique. It's different. It's only very short. So therefore Vizme, after a lot of back and forth and, you know, and, name decisions came along. So we did a name change, you know, sometime about a year and a half, 2 years after the product development started.
What was the previous website? I want to go look it up on archive.
I don't know if you could even pull up anymore. It was called Presenter. So EWC Presenter. I can't remember.
EWC Presenter?
No, EWC.
EWC Presenter. Yeah. You know, so I was looking through your history and I came across this one site, again, still available, that seems like Easy Web Content. That's what it's called. It seems like an in-between business. It seemed like what you saw was building websites is tough. That's why people hire my agency to do it. I'm going to make it easy for them to build their own websites. And you created a website builder, which is similar to what Squarespace has and others, right?
Yeah, great question. So I kind of skipped over that just because I don't want to make the story too long for you. But in fact, let me connect the dots, right? It'll make a lot more sense. When I was still, which I continue to do so, running Hindsight, but at some point, this whole thing about people asking for being able to edit their own sites, I created a very simple tool. It was just an HTML editor where basically anyone, whether we design a site for them or not, this is before WordPress where the sites were static HTML based. Pages. And in order to edit it, they had to, you know, download programs. So we just created a very simple tool. All it was you put your FTP access, your hosting account information, and it connects to your website, regardless of where it's hosted, HostGator or, you know, anywhere else. And then it would just open the content of your page and you edit the content and then you publish it back. So it wasn't really to build websites. However, between that, we did tackle, getting into building a site builder and so on. And, really that was something that one didn't work out.
Why not? Because it clearly makes sense. Frankly, even HostGator is nervous about these builders.
It is. And, I'll tell you right now, one of the biggest mistakes I made was the site builder. And why? One of the best decisions I made was the HTML editor, knowing, however, after a couple of years that it's going to go downhill because less and less sites are going to be static. More and more people are going to use site builders or their sites are going to be WordPress built. Therefore, they don't need our tool anymore because they already come with an editor itself, right? However, it was so inexpensive to build. And it took very little effort that it actually, the timing was right. And it was a product that actually went on to this day. It generates some revenue for us, a few thousand dollars a month still after like 9 years.
Which product makes
the HTML editor?
The HTML, where people say, hey, I've got a website. It's already built and not in WordPress. I can't edit it. I'm going to use this tool and edit my existing site.
Exactly. So we still have some users that are using it. And we're talking about these are people that have sites that are 10 years old, 12 years old, 15 years old, who never still have taken the initiative to redesign their sites. They're just fine. They just want to keep it or they don't care. about redesigning it. So they just go in and edit the site. But it's a dying business, this HTML editor.
So then what about the web builder? Why do you say that that was a mistake?
Long execution, bad user experience. The mistake that I made was trying to tackle too many things within the site builder one time. Instead of making it extremely simple, focus too much on powerful features, which doesn't appeal to the non-designer in that aspect. So all these were really good learning lessons, though, of how VizMe came about. Now, VizMe, Easy Web Content, is basically now the corporate entity. You know, it's just the legal name of VizMe. VizMe is the product. We really don't focus on the site builder. You know, there's support as needed on the HTML editor, but it's all about VizMe.
Got
now.
It. Okay. When we get into VizMe right after this, Bob, of just to sum things up, it seems like you learned to create software and you learned how to get VizMe right by getting the site builder wrong. And the site builder to me made so much sense at the time. You're one of the first people to realize it's too tough for people to build websites. I'm going to create a tool that makes it easy, but making it easy is hard. And that is something that even with VizMe you've discovered. And I'm guessing that what you learned before with the site builder is helping you make VizMe better, easier to use, and helping you obsess about it.
Exactly right. So there's been a lot of learning lessons along the way. We still, you know, as any product developer would ever tell you, it's always a learning curve and you're always trying to improve things, you know, but it's definitely been a great thing. So, you know, my 17, 18 years of knowledge into design, development, having worked with clients on a regular basis on designing their sites, what they want, what they don't want, creating presentations for clients, infographics, right. All those things together, and then the mistakes made or also good decisions made through some of these, other small offerings is all now kind of, it's all now making sense. You know what I mean?
Okay, you know what? Let me take a break here and talk about my first sponsor. And the first sponsor kind of connects with WordPress because freaking guys at WordPress, I had Matt Mullenweg on here. He's an unassuming guy. Now he's grown his hair long, kind of like very open source. He battles and cares about only open source. I've never seen him battle about anything else. And still, every time I go to freaking TechMeme, I look at their ad that they have for jobs. It doesn't say, come work for us, we have good benefits. It doesn't say, come work for us, whatever. It just says, 30% down, 70% to go, WordPress. Meaning 30% of the internet is now on WordPress, 70% of the internet has to go. And I've been watching this for years. It used to say, I think 20, then 20 down, 80 to go, 21. So they're like, boom, boom, gobbling up. That means 30% of websites are built on WordPress. So here's the thing, guys. If you're listening to me, you've got to hear that 30% of websites are built on WordPress for a reason. WordPress just freaking works. I just interviewed the founder of Skybell yesterday. He won't even let me talk about how many millions the guy's generating in sales. He's kind of a freak that way, in that he's like watching his data very carefully. He's very concerned with making sure that nobody knows concerned with privacy because he's selling to bigger companies. Still, I just went to builtwith.com and I see his site is running on WordPress. Guy's selling Internet of Things doorbells with video cameras. He's super bright, great technology, cutting edge. And still, when he publishes a website to tell the world what it does, he uses WordPress. So 30% of the internet using WordPress. Even cutting edge technology creators are using WordPress to produce it. So if anyone's listening to the sound of my voice and they're looking to set up a website, really, I urge you to consider WordPress as a way to do it. Now, if you're going to do WordPress, there are tons of hosting packages, tons of hosting places where you can go to have your website hosted. I highly recommend that you go with HostGator. When I started this new business for chatbots, I went immediately to HostGator. Let's check myself for a moment to make sure we did. Yeah, we started immediately with HostGator. And the reason is, they've been around for years. I've done interviews with people who HostGator competed with. They talked about how HostGator crushed them because HostGator was obsessed. They've been around. They're not going away, number one. Number two, their prices are super low. Why pay for frankly, I hate to say this for a HostGator business, but it's become commoditized, web hosting. Why pay $30,000, $50,000, thousands of dollars, whatever it is, when HostGator will give it to you at a low price? And then if you need to grow, they'll grow with you. They have prices, they have products that they don't even list on their website. When you're ready to scale up, they'll scale with you. All right, if you're looking to host your website, go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, where they will take their already low prices and lower them even more. They'll make it super easy for you to launch a website, one-click install, and you'll be ready to go. There's so much more that I could say about them, but I'm just going to let that website stand for itself. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Wow, that WordPress really took over the freaking internet.
It did.
I see how you had this business. I see how you said this is not enough. I get now also how VisMe came about. What I'm surprised is when I go to the Wayback Machine and I look at the early version of VisMe.co, immediately you don't just take on infographics. You don't just take on banners. You do the whole thing, product demos, presentations, infographics, animations. Why do so much?
Yeah, so that's what is differentiates us from some of the competitors, and it's been also made things a lot more difficult. Typically, for most companies or products that you develop, right, you usually go and basically tackle one thing. So you just focus, let's say, on presentations and so on. Right. Maybe that made sense. However, in our case, I just knew that, VisMe, really what we're trying to be is a all-in-one visual communication tool. And usually you have to explain it. What does that mean? Our mission and our vision is that if you want to create, anything that is not a giant proposal with, pages and pages of text, which you're going to use Microsoft Word for, the future of communication is visual. And so we're trying to make this tool, this all-in-one tool that you use to do all of those.
But even if that's your long-term vision, why not say we're going to start with the first thing? And the first thing is people are coming to us for presentations. We're going to let them make presentations here.
That's correct. So the way that it was done, first of all, the focus that we had mostly on, to be frank, was on the presentation and infographic area. So those are the two we focus heavily on. So although you could do some of these other abilities on it, if you want to do, let's say, a product demo, it basically will be a presentation that you attach some motion and some video and so on to it, and you create it as a product. So it was still a presentation, but it was more interactive. You see what I mean? So we're just tightening the lines in between. I look at it as not being different things. I look at them all being the same. That's the thing. So when I look at the presentation, when I look at an infographic to me is a tall form of a presentation. A presentation is slides, and an infographic is blocks of slides stacked on top of each other. So you see, there's a resemblance for us.
It's all a canvas with different blocks on top of it.
Yes.
So here's the thing. When I first heard about you, here's the thing that blew my mind. I remember talking to Heaton Shaw, the marketer, about infographics, and he said people laugh at infographics, but they're great. They're viral. They lead to leads and so on. I said, how do you do it? He goes, well, it costs like $1,000, $1,500. I forget what it was. And I thought, that's interesting, but that's a lot to spend to experiment with this thing that sure. Who knew if it was going to work? And then boom, you come in and you say, guess what, guys, you can just go in and use this tool and it won't be as customizable as infographics that you pay $1,000 for. But sure. It'll work and it'll look good.
Yeah, and we weren't the first ones to do the infographics, right? There was a tool called Easily, that I think they were one of the first ones that came out, and there's been a few others out there that have done it. Our approach was a little bit different. We looked at those tools, and they were a little bit dumbed down, or they had limitations in the templates, or what happened was they didn't give you any kind of engaging abilities. You couldn't assign easily links and have it go to a link to a website or create a pop-up if you wanted to. I want to roll over this, icon or this iPhone and show what the product can do instead of having to just make it taller and taller with more information. So we wanted to bring that engaging part into the tool, and that's where I saw the opportunity.
How long did it take you to make that? This is clearly not like an MVP that you had in mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's continually being developed, where we have so much,
you just told me, you blew my mind. You said, hey, Andrew, the news that I have to share with you now is we're no longer in beta. I said, are you kidding me? You guys launched this business back in 2012. You just got out of beta in 2018. You said, yeah, there's a lot to explain about that. But before we even get to leaving beta, the first version that you actually launched that someone was able to use, how long did that take?
That was about 9 months, which was a buggy MVP. That was that initial, in terms of as a potential replacement for Flash. So that was about 9 months of development, very, brief MVP that was launched. And then from there, when we made the decision to modify the tool to make it for the masses, right, for the non-designers, appeal to them, it was another year and a half. I'm going by memory here. And then we relaunched it basically, opened it up to the public at that point. And it was just free. Everybody just come and, use it so we could get feedback. And it wasn't until about almost a year or something after that that we actually, opened it up as a, paid option too. So you could also now get the premium version. And since then, it's gone over, pretty much every year and a half, it's gone over some major, major updates. And this last one, that we just did was a couple of months ago was a major upgrade, which is setting the tone for all the great stuff that we've got on the way that's coming up. I can't get into too much of those, but I can tell you is that there's some really cool stuff in the works right now.
I feel like the biggest challenge, and you and I talked before we started, the big challenge is how do you give all the tools that professional designers need in your site and at the same time make it easy enough that someone like me who's intimidated by design can go in and know what to click and not get too in the weeds.
So feedback. That's one. Also, you kind of after being in business, you know, designer yourself for 17, 18 years, you learn a couple of things, but you also make some mistakes because this has actually been a huge challenge. It's only really in the last 2-3 years that we've got it down. And I'm very guilty of it, is that I would look at it as more features, or we need to give more flexibility to the user. And if it was another person I know that was a non-designer that started this tool, they probably would have made it extremely dumbed down so that it had very little flexibility. Now, that would have actually probably appealed to a lot of other people, but what we're trying to do is to find this, you know, balance between the two. How is it that we're trying to make this, BizMe, where it appeals to the non-designers and also professionals, by the way, there's more and more of them using the tool as we roll out things. It's to kind of make certain things subtle that they're there if you need them. So like if you want to animate something, it's not like in your face. There isn't a timeline sitting at the bottom just waiting for it. You actually have to look for it. You have to click on an icon and look for it. If you want to add interactivity, you actually have to take a couple of steps, but they're not extremely hidden where you just cannot do it. They don't require coding. They don't require too many clicks to achieve. So we give you just enough.
But that's the balance that you're serving, not just multiple different visualization options like infographics, presentations, et cetera, but also you're servicing two different groups of people, professional designers and amateurs. And how do you make it work? How do you make the tool work for both? That's the challenge that you guys keep working on. Right. Let's go back to the beginning. Fair enough?
Sure, let's do
okay.
it.
Let's go back to the beginning. The first few users that you got came from places like Tech Breakfast. What's Tech Breakfast and how many users can you get from there?
Yeah, it wasn't many, but it's actually very interesting. Tech Breakfast, it was launched in the DC area, and it was very interesting. And right now, I think it's going, not as strong now. It's still going on in some places, but it used to be where every week in the DC area, there was 2 or 3 Tech Breakfasts in different locations, local cities. You go in at 8 a.m, there's 5 demoers that are startups, and basically they get in front of 50 to 100 people that care about technology. Continental Breakfast, and basically screen share and show what it does. So I did a few of those, in different locations over the course of 6 to 9 months. And in fact, what's interesting is the very first time that I did it, VizMe wasn't out of beta yet. We were just working on it. And that exact question came up is that I had screenshots. I'm showing you, this is what the tool is going to be. This is what it's going to do. And the question from a couple of people was, why are you trying to tackle more than presentations? Why don't you just focus on that, right? And so that's the thing is I was like, my vision was much grander. And so it's why it's taken, so long to kind of to come where it is. It wasn't a lot of users. We're talking about tens of users coming from there. Other users were, from online, posting on some local sites and different communities. Hey, there's a product coming out. It's VizMe. In that case, presenter. Join the actual invite. So we got about 700 something total at that point.
And a large number of them was you reaching out to people?
It wasn't manually reaching out at that point. It was just, having a construction page up, a beta page up, invite only. And it would put their emails and we just post it on some of the local communities.
Got it.
When I say local, I mean niche communities on design, marketing, right. Content. Yeah.
Okay, so you got all those people in a mailing list, then you opened up the app to them, they got to use it. What's the big thing that you learned when real users used your software?
It wasn't ready at all for prime time, which I knew.
Really? What wasn't ready about it?
User experience, it was buggy. It wasn't still working on most browsers. It wasn't ready for IE yet. It was just Chrome-based at that point. It was a resource hog. It took a lot of, it would heat up your Mac at that point, if I say that. So we've come a long way.
Why didn't you give up on it at that point?
That's just not the way my mind works.
You knew this is going to work. Tell me about how your mind works. What is it about your mind that got you to keep going? Are you the kind of person who just sticks with things, or are you the kind of person who, when you have a vision, you can't stop? What is it?
I have this, you know, almost, if you tell me you can't do something, somebody tells me I have to prove I'm wrong. It's almost like, you know, going even back to my parents, you know, don't do this. And I would do the opposite. Not that I was a bad kid, but, you know, I was never a rebel in terms of, you know, from a aspect of getting to trouble big time, but it's more of if somebody tells me this is how it's done. Like when I look at PowerPoint and I see this tool in 20 years hasn't really changed much, I just can't help to say, why the hell can it be done differently? Why does it have to work this way? Why can't you bring all these other things into it or simplify it? That's just the way my mind works. But also I truly believe that we could do a fantastic job at really being the one company that can create this medium that becomes the tool. Let me explain this way very briefly. I believe that most people, when they go to create some sort of a content, they are it's segmented. When they, you know, I need to create a PowerPoint, I need to create a presentation, I need to create a document, I need to create a business card, and for each of those, they have to use different tools, different user, you know, experiences. Why does it have to be that way? Why can't there just be one tool that allows you to do all of that within one interface, and so that you don't feel like you have to go to 5-6 different places, pay for 4 or 5 different tools, or have different learning curves? That's really the way.
Kind of like if I want to take a note for myself, I might open up a Google Docs. If I want to create a letter to send out,
sure,
I might use Google Docs. But for all these different writing experiences, I open up Google Docs. I don't need a different letter writing app and a different note taking and so on.
Right. But in visual communication, right, it's a little bit different because it's not text. It's a combination of text, video, audio, images, icons, right? So it gets a little bit more heavier, which is why people differentiate into different tools to do that. We're trying to just bridge that gap. We're trying to bring it all together.
Okay. You started to get some feedback on it. You kept on building this, building out the software. I'm still thinking, this is a guy whose business just lost a lot of customers because of Flash. Mm-hmm. Where he must have lost a lot of money. How in the hole did you go in order to build Visme?
It's been expensive. It's not been cheap. But it started very slow, meaning that it was a side project. It was just me and I had one of the colleagues, you know, the developer got involved at Hindsight to work on it. And that's all it was when we came out of the beta after about 9 months, right? And so basically all the profits that was coming out, again, I made Hindsight very lean as it could be, and pretty much took all the profits that I was making and just every penny went into Visme. And that HTML editor that I told you about was a little bit helpful. It was generating
But there was no period there where you were losing money month to month.
I've always been a guy that likes to have something for the rainy days. So if I needed to tap into it, I did that, but it wasn't, there wasn't many cases of that. I mean, look, you know, it's, going on a product that is not, there's no investment in it. There was no outside, raise, there was no loans, or anything to, you know, create Visme. Over a period of 2.5-3 years, it was not generating a single penny of revenue by itself as a product. You would think like, why are you taking your time, you know, come out? But I just knew that down the road in time, things will come together.
You know what, Payman, I'm at a point where I think I might be losing money month to month now. And I want to make sure that I understand it. I'm going to go over it, with my financial advisor in a little bit, but I'm wondering if it's the right decision or not. Should I be investing in a business and losing money a little bit so that I can hire the right people, test a bunch of ads, or should I always make sure that every month we at least make a dollar in profit? What's your philosophy on that?
I think, you know, making profit is very important, especially when you're bootstrap operation. I think in any business, it's extremely important. It's not the reason why I, you know, started these businesses. Well, Hindsight, yeah, I'm to pay my way through school. I can't lie about that. And look, we have to charge money to make a product. And at the end of the day, you want your family and so on to benefit from it. But I would always ask the question on, do you truly believe in what you're creating? And do you feel that it's going to have enough value for your audience? And if the answer is yes, and you feel that you're going to have mileage enough to go that far, I would A, run it as lean as possible and be very self-conscious about, you know, what you're investing in and so on. However, you know, if you have, you know, just at some point, we all have doubts whether we really, you know, should be. I've had doubts at some point, not about should I close down, but hey, how big can this get? Can this actually, you know, become profitable at some point? And so on. There's been those questions. But I would look at 2 years down the road. Instead of looking at 1 month down the road, I would look at 2 years, 3 years down the road. How confident are you?
So you would be willing to lose some money for a year, two, maybe even three?
I wouldn't bankrupt myself, but I would set a certain amount of, I would budget it. I would put some money
aside. Okay with that.
So, yeah, I would take some money out of the bank, actually like out of my personal expenses and so on, and literally move it into an account. It's almost like an investment. You know, hey, somebody just came in and invested 30K, 50K, whatever it is, 20K, 10K.
And you consider yourself the investor, putting that money in the account and say, this is what it is. I'm not endlessly bankrolling this thing, but I just invested whatever amount. How much money did you do that with?
So let me see. Over the first, you know, 2 or 3 years in terms of how much was allocated to BizMe to then reach, you know, profitability. I honestly never really crunched out the numbers. I did go through the numbers. It was in bursts. Like I would go in, you know, 6 months, a year. It was probably a few hundred thousand dollars. You know, a few hundred, whether it was 200 or 300 or 350, it was somewhere.
But somewhere between two and no more than five, you put into enough. This just.
Exactly. But I look at it this way. I could have gone and bought a property, let's say, you know, a house or a townhouse, put down 100, 150K and spend another 50 to 100K fixing up and so on. And potentially in 5 or 10 years, it could double in cost, right? Or some of it paid off, and I walk away with $500,000-$600,000. Or I could invest that money into a product that I truly believe in, and it could generate much, much more than that. It has much higher prospects.
My issue is psychological. That if there was a period in my life where my business was doing really well, and then we had a month that was down where we lost money, and I remember CFO coming into my office and saying, we lost money. I go, why does this guy care that much? It's one, look at the rest of the year. Yeah. And it wasn't until later that I realized he was highlighting an issue. I shouldn't have blown it off and said, it's a one-time thing. I should have said, this is a crisis, because after that month, there was another one and another one. And it took me a little while to recognize a crisis. And so now I keep thinking, never lose money. Always figure out what you need to do in order to get the month to at least be profitable, even if you don't always get it there. But at the same time, I also have another part of me that says, invest in the business. Because like you said, where else are you going to get a better return?
Yeah. I mean, it's if you look at the, you know, the most wealthy people, now wealthy as in, you know, the products that build. And then if you want to talk about, you know, the monetary side of it as well, then, you know, a majority of those, you know, had their own businesses start, or they were early on part of, you know, an operation. That's the thing. But I think it also depends person to person. I'm actually a pretty risk averse person. I'm not a person that will go as actually, I've never skydived. You know, I don't, you know, go do crazy things and so on. So a lot of times entrepreneurs, some of them are known for taking very, very crazy risks. I try to take risks that I'm as, you know, that I look at the worst case and the best case situation. So, you know, there's a potential that BizMe could be multiple times bigger than it is right now. We could have actually gone the investor route and taken, you know, I'd look at it as more risk and potentially bigger, you know, rewards. But I just know how far this thing can go. And now that we've gotten to a point where it's growing and it's doing, you know, pretty good, I'm very happy with where we are. You know, we're going to keep reinvesting in it. I don't look at the short term, you know, results of it. I look at the long term. I look at it's about 5 years, 3 to 5 years down the road that I want to look back and see how far BizMe's come along.
All right. Let me talk about my second sponsor, which kind of connects into what we're talking about here, a company called TopTal. On Monday of this week, we're recording this on a Wednesday. On Monday of the following week, I should say, I've got a conversation scheduled with Jack, the guy who I connected with through TopTal. I went to them and I said, I need a part-time CFO, someone who's going to really hold me accountable, let me think through profitability and so on. And it's interesting. First thing you do with TopTal is you talk to a matcher, and the matcher didn't just listen to what I wanted. He said, let me think about it. And he came back to me and said, Andrew, what you're saying to me is not that you need a part-time CFO. What you want is a profitability advisor. You want someone to just think through profitability this month, but also a year from now. Is that right? I said, oh, yeah. So then they got me in touch with four different people, because I wasn't sure what kind of person I wanted. And I hired Jack. Jack's been great. Jack did things for me like I knew I should have a budget for 2018. I can't freaking sit down and do a freaking budget. So I said, Jack, can you do it? And here's the great thing. I said, I can't even participate. He said, can you give me like some data on this? I go, you know what I could do? We use Basecamp to chat with our whole team and keep things. I could add you to Basecamp and put an announcement in. Can you talk to everyone? And Jack never is like a lazy guy. He loves this stuff. He goes, yeah, sure, I'll talk to them. He gets on calls with people. He puts together a spreadsheet for me with my budget for 2018 based on even talking to a writer and saying, what percentage of your time are you spending on this project versus that project? I look at it, I go, okay, this is not something that's going to be an exact month-to-month achievement, but it gives me a sense of where we are and where we could spend money. For a long time, TopTal got on the phone with me and said, talk about the finance people. You always talk about how people can hire developers from us. Talk about the finance people. Like, talk about the fact that if someone's raising money and they need spreadsheets and they need data, they could hire a finance person from us. And I never did, because I thought, if you're going to promise people that they hire a TopTal person and they'll raise money, that's not what you're trying to say. And I don't know how to explain that they could hire finance people without giving that impression. No way. I'm not doing it. And then I started talking to their finance people and I understood. Dude, they have people there who, first of all, have worked for companies that have gone public and or worked for major management consulting companies. We're talking about the best of the best in finance. A lot of times the reason they want to get involved in this is because they're in between jobs, company they worked for was sold, and they're looking to figure out what they want to do next. Or they want to just be involved in new industries, and the way that they could learn is by bringing the finance experience that they have. There's a lot of reasons why such great people in finance would work for TopTal. And if anyone out there is listening to the sound of my voice and has heard me talk forever about developers at TopTal, I'm telling you, they got great developers. But you should consider having somebody give you some feedback on your finances. You should consider having somebody take a look at the way you run your business and give you advice. It really is tremendously helpful. And these guys at TopTal have some of the best people in their network. And don't take my word for it. Just go to this URL I'm about to give you, and you will be able to talk to them and see if it's a good fit or not. Here's the weird thing. When you go to that URL, you're going to see what I'm about to read to you, which is that Mixergy listeners will get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when they pay for their first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. I actually don't know if that applies to the finance people, but whether or not it does, click that green button. You'll get on a call with someone at TopTal. You'll ask them any question you have. And if it's a good fit for you, you can get started right away. That's top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. TopTal.com/Mixergy. TopTal.com/Mixergy. Do you have anyone giving you outside feedback? Is it your dad? On your finances, I mean.
Not so much. No, that we have consultants, you know, legal and accounting, bookkeeping. So those are things that I don't want to say outsource, but, you know, it's companies, you know, individuals and so on that we have. So, those are set up as needed on demand, you know, tap into those resources.
That's what I have right now, too. I went a month without talking to Jack. I said, I'm too busy. I took a long trip for 10 days to Portugal. I don't have time. But immediately I came back. I go, Jack, we got to talk. All right.
It's always good to talk to your, you know, financial person. Hopefully it's not depressing, but, you know, that's reality checks come from that point.
That's right? Why I try to schedule it ahead of time with the finance people, with the bookkeepers. Every month, get on a call with me. Force me to look at it at least once a month, because otherwise, you know, like you said, when it's depressing, you avoid it. You think, you know what, I can't deal with this now because I'm trying to improve the numbers, but you got to look at the numbers while you're improving them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Do you do that? Like Will Schroeder, the founder of Startups.co, the guy who bought Zirtual and a bunch of other businesses, he says every day he gets specific numbers on his phone. He will not start his day without them. Are you at that level of obsession?
Not every day, but I can tell you that on a there's certain numbers and so on that are reviewed every few days, and there's numbers that are viewed on a monthly basis.
What's the every few day numbers you have to look at?
You know, in terms of non-revenue, but as far as traffic, you know, engagement and so on, there's certain channels that we have that are running. But as far as revenues, I would say every day, every couple of days, that is reviewed just to see if there is any, you know, anything odd that's sticking out. You know, new users, customers coming on board, even a churn and so on that we look at every so often. But as far as, you know, what was the profit, you know, for this period of time, you know, that's not something we need to look at every day. I mean,
because that's a lagging indicator. What you're looking at is the leading indicators, the things that tell you, hey, there's going to be a problem in a month, not, hey, how did you do last month? But when you say the channels, what are you talking about? What do you mean that you're buying ads and you want to know how are they converting? Is that the kind of thing?
We don't do much ads at all. Yeah. So that's a great point. I guess that brings up to another thing is that, you know, how do you acquire users and how are you growing Bizme and so on is, you know, we used to be more about selling. Now it's all about educating people. That's where, you know, I have the video series and we have all these educational resources. We create some really great ebooks. We have a very, very popular, what's called a visual learning center. It's our blog, blog.bizme.co. That's all about teaching people how to, you know, communicate and so on. And so all that content is free and anybody can see it. Anybody can go to it. And most of them, we don't even ask for your information, maybe other than an ebook, just to get your email if we ever want to, you know, bother you and let you know about some other stuff we release. So we don't do much advertising. So as far as channels, yeah, I mean, we want to know, you know, where did this user, free or paid, where did they come from? Was it Google search? Was it from a specific site that mentioned us? Was it they went to our blog, they went to a specific article, and as a result, they came in and they actually upgraded?
So but this is something you're looking at on a regular basis.
Yeah, I would say more on a weekly basis, but there's certain things such as, you know, the number of customers gained that day, the number of users that I've registered for the tool. It's basically, there's a dashboard and it's just there. It's not like I have to go look for it. I mean, you know, we've actually, by the way, built all our own tools, which is really neat. Like people say, hey, you know, what are you using for your metrics? What software do you use for that? There are a number of tools that we use as far as like for marketing and so on. We're a big user of Buzzsumo and a few other products out there, great products. Google Analytics, you know, we use that, but we've created our own internal platform. We spent a lot of time and actually it's cost us a lot than just paying $50 a month, $100 a month. So people say you're crazy and idiot for doing that. However, it's doing things exactly the way we want and it's in one place and it's in one console and it works down to the spec that we need it to do.
If you had to pick one number that's the most important number for you to look at regularly, what would that be?
Total number of users, leads in a sense that actually trying the tool out. Conversions to pay, that's very important. We look at that on a regular basis. But at the same time, that I don't look at it on a Saturday and say, why the heck is it down? I mean, it's Saturday, it's Sunday, it's like Christmas, you know, those numbers, summertime.
What about this? I went to SimilarWeb to see where you were getting your traffic, and you got a massive amount of traffic because so many people will link back to the creations that they made that are hosted on your site. But one thing stood out for me. Popcash. I never heard of Popcash, but it's sending you significant paid traffic. Look, I see the smile. You're holding it back, right?
No, I'm not. I'm actually, I don't know about that one.
I have to check
on my content editors.
I thought that was a smile like, hey, Andrew, you caught me. No, you know what it is? It's a pop under network.
No, it's, I haven't looked at that value. I would have to go to one of my colleagues to look at that.
Okay.
It's all.
But you're not doing like a heavy pop under advertising as far as you know?
No, I don't. The only thing that like the soft marketer of our tool really is if somebody decides to create something in our tool and they decide to embed it to their site or they share that published, you know, link with someone else. But there are cases where people, you know, create like there is a very popular Spanish blog or actually newspaper. Starts with an E. I can't remember the name. I have to look them up. But every day they're publishing number of infographics and so on. And we get a huge amount of traffic, you know, out of that. So it's actually helpful in the Spanish market.
How is that? You know what? I was wondering about that. So if someone creates an infographic with you, they could download the image. Yes, they can have a watermark with Bizme on it, but that's not linking over to you. What are they doing? Embedding it?
They are embedding it because the interactivity comes with the embedding. So if you have that's where an HTML5 based system, right? If you download it as a PDF, the links will work, but it won't be interactive. And people want it to also, here's another thing. We actually have analytics. So if you want to know how many people are viewing your infographic, how many slides did it look at, that all is comes with the embedding function that comes into play. And it's optional. You can actually remove where it says, you know, made with Bizme or something, you know, or if you're a premium plan, those things can be removed. But a lot of people just leave it on. You know, they just leave it on or they don't care. But, you know, those people that are brand specific, they remove it. So I would say there's so much more that we could gain if we force it under there. But we only get a trickle of that.
Ah, okay. All right. I get this. Now I'm starting to understand how this works. All right. So we kind of jumped from the tech breakfast to suddenly you're on lots of different websites. You're embedded on their sites. They're linking to you and so on. Somewhere in between were some decisions, which were, here's one. You told our producer, the first few users happened because I was just going out to networks and talking to people in person and online. Then after that, we had to figure out, whether it was a product decision that helped us grow. How do we redesign the product so that non-designers can also use it? That was one of the big reasons why you grew. Talk about that a little bit, how design leads to growth.
Yeah, so user experience is, you know, extremely important. People make decision based on the cover of a magazine, you know, at the beginning. Now, once you open a cover and, you know, if it's not working for you, the content, I mean, there's books I've started within chapter one or two, you know, now I'm much better at it. Really read reviews, just like movies, you know, if the Rotten Tomatoes has a rating, you know, under 80%, 75%, I'm not even going to touch it. You know, people judge it by that. And so the from the time they land on your website, they log in, the experience they get from it, that actually really heavily affects, you know, churn as far as signups and so on. So user experience is key for us. And that the design part is part of the user experience. It's not deep, you know, the decision maker on it. It's part of it. But every step that you make is actually an integral part of the user experience that comes into play. So one of the things that we had to do, and again, in fact, is to move certain elements and hide them and put them behind or not make them so obvious, is because they were actually affecting the experience of people they're trying to do. You know, if something keeps getting away, a pop-up keeps giving, you know, getting in front of you, and that help tip that gets in front of you, that's no longer a help tip, right? That's a nuisance. So, and there isn't one thing that we ever did, and I never really understood that. There's many people that have said that. Is, you know, you expect that in order to create a tool, hey, we got a press release and all of a sudden everything went viral. We got covered on TechCrunch and things more like that. And we're a bootstrap operation. We never had the luxury of getting press because we said we raised X millions of dollars and so everybody writes about us. None of that. It's been just grueling, you know, hard work. And from a product aspect, it's been all these hundreds and hundreds of tiny little adjustments that you made. And each of them may make 0.1%, 0.0%, tiny little adjustment. Together, they account for a big change. So that's how I think the success of products come in. There's so many elements that you put together one by one. And together,
how do you do that? The tiny little adjustments. I found that, let's just take the Mixergy interviews, for example. Our system just kind of worked, and we let it go. And because things work, there's no screaming need to fix them, so you don't fix them. I finally had to say to the team, I want every month, if anyone who's involved in the pre-interview process, to get on a call together and think through all the problems that we've had in the last month or opportunities and how we could seize them. I had to do that. What's your process?
So our process has been listening to our users. You know, when we launched the product, you know, after about a year, year and a half, we launched it and people are reviewing it. We asked some, you know, bloggers and so on, hey, there's a tool. Can you take a look at it? Can you check it out? We'll give you access and get some reviews. And not paying a majority of those for, anything for it. They just wanted to write about us. And a lot of the feedback was overall positive. But then, you know, we started screening through all the tickets and the inquiries that come in, and we started to get and look in between the lines, and we realized that, you know, it's not, I don't want to call it complaints, but there's people that are having difficulty doing certain things. So what we started to do was create a log of every inquiry that comes in. And I personally have gone through, you know, again, I may not be answering tickets all the time, but there's certain ones that I see or are handed out to me. So we have a huge list, and we look at, what are the most common questions or complaints that people have or pain points that they, you know, report? And we find a common denominator between that. Then we look and see how we can improve that. So, you know, at the beginning, it seemed like everything's just fine. It's just, but why aren't we growing more? You know, why is things going faster? And you're like, well, the tool's good. It's publishing. People are creating stuff. They're sharing. They're talking about it. But no, you got to dig deeper. And once you start digging deeper, you will always find, you know, enhancements that you can make.
So, but what's your cadence? What's your, is it every week you go through the list of things that came in and you go over them? Or is it, what's that process at the company at VizMe?
So, yeah, one of the advantages of, you know, the way that we operate, and again, I'm sure others operate in some way that way, is that we're pretty quick. We make decisions pretty quickly, you know, and we're a team of about 20, you know, low 20s people right now. And, you know, every morning I'm involved in a development meeting every morning. Pretty much, if I'm here in the office, I'm going to have a 10-15 minute meeting with a development team and with different departments, 5-10 minutes if needed. I will talk because I want to know what's going on. I'm pretty hands-on. However, one of the things with our support is that there is this trail of tickets that come in, and then the support people are responsible for reporting certain things that come, you know, that are reported. It may not be bugs. It may just be other items. So then we look at those, we dissect them, and then we make decisions. I mean, there's been times where just actually yesterday, you know, we looked at it and just today, hey, images are too small on the left panel for people to drop it into the background. You know, I just saw this happen myself. One of my designers is actually, I told her, hey, I need you to, I want to send this a slide deck to someone. And so I need to change the background image. Can you put this one in? She puts it in, it's not working, and puts another one. And then real quickly, we realize, you know what? The images are too small on the left panel. We need to make them bigger. And why, you know, and that's like a decision in a matter of 2 hours that was made. I lost your
so
audio.
So just here's a problem that comes up. We're going to go and take care of it.
That is exactly right.
That's
so it
okay.
comes up. Yeah. I mean, look, there's times that we have to agree as a team. There's times where something is questionable. Somebody may ask for something and then we have to look at it and someone may raise their finger, one of the team members, and say, that doesn't make sense. It's right there. And then we have to agree as a team. So it's usually like three or four of us. And if, you know, more than one person raises their arm and says, hey, I don't know, this is questionable, we're going to leave it off. We leave it off. We come back to it if somebody else complains about it. So it's not where everybody asks something, we do it. We actually have a certain process, but it's very dynamic. It's very quick. And it's almost based on, it's not a calculation. It's very fluid.
You know, so I had a problem with that where I would find a problem and then I'd stop everyone and say, let's deal with it. It's important. But
sure.
I was making crazy work for people because they were working on something else that was really important. Now I'm telling them to stop because of this. So what I decided to do was anything that's a fire, if it's critical, we stop and we deal with it. Anything else goes on a specific list. And then once a month or once every 2 months, you have to go through your list, pick the things that are most important and address those, and then come back again in another month or so to take care of the next list.
We're very similar to that. I mean, emergency issues, priority issues that occur, they're addressed very quickly. But there's loads of other stuff, which I kind of call them noise. And between those noise, you find little signals, tiny
right.
ones. And they kind of go into this, I forgot what the term, we have a term for it. It's called the long list or the ever list that we know it will never be completed, right? It just grows. But then we move stuff. It's just a Google Doc, you know, it's just a sheet of like bullets, and we just move stuff into the priority and decide when we're going to pick them. And of course, you know, we use bug tracking, you know, Jira and so on, and we have backlogs. But even before that, we have this master list that all the other people are involved, and only me and one or two other people actually decide if it needs to be looked at further on. But it's not an everyday thing. It's a once in a while item that we visit.
What's that thing that you guys did where you let people embed maps and SurveyMonkey polls and so on? Mm-hmm. In VisMe. Where did that come from, and then how did that do?
Yeah, it actually does great because there's people that embed external content. They will come to us and say, hey, well, you guys don't have the survey feature. You don't have this. But the fact of the matter is we're not going to create every single component that you possibly can think of. That would be a site builder. That would be, you know, such and such.
And they want to embed a poll within a presentation, within an ebook, within what?
Yeah, let me give you a scenario. Let's say you're a nonprofit organization. And you create an infographic to raise awareness about your cause. And at the bottom of it, typically you would say in that infographic that's shared everywhere, you would say, hey, go to our website and donate now. But now who's going to actually put that URL in and go to it? The next step was some tools allow you to link, you know, click here and you click and go to that link. In VisMe, you can do all of that. Or you can actually go and let's say you're using SurveyMonkey and or some other tool and has a donation form. You go and embed it right into your bottom of your infographic. So now the nonprofit is using that. They get to the bottom. Okay, I'm convinced. I want to donate. They click the donate. It is secure because it's actually using the embed code from that platform. You could embed talent acquisition. You know, there is some large companies using us for talent acquisition. You'd be surprised. They create their resumes in our tool instead of creating text base. You know, IBM is a big, big user of our tool. They have a department, a division that creates a lot of job opportunities using our tool in conjunction with other posts. And they drop in videos. They drop in, you know, maps that are from, you know, Google Maps that show the location of areas. So there's so many different usages to it, from the nonprofits to the corporate to just the individual who wants to maybe embed something into the project.
Right. There are a couple of things I want to end on. One is I'm hoping you could tell the story of the big company. I know you're not going to say the name that came to you and said, hey, what do they say?
Which one? There's been a few of them.
Okay. I saw you smiling. So I said, maybe you understand which one I'm talking about. So I stopped talking. It was the one that said, hey, look, we have, a big group of people who want to sign up. We need an enterprise plan. You said, we don't have an enterprise plan. We said, well, they said to you, here's how many people we have.
Yes. So what happened, this is early on our tool before we had a team and enterprise plan. Okay. We were just a single user. This is, I don't know, three and a half years ago or so. I'm going by memory here. And I came and said, hey, we are looking to, adopt a little bit further away from PowerPoint, and we want to bring them online. We want to be able to make them easy to share. But none of the tools out there have everything that we need. You guys are kind of closest to it, but here's a list. So there was this big list of 40 items and so on. And long story short, it was between us and, 9 or 10 others. I think it was 10 actually total. So we made it down to just a few, and eventually we made it down to us by doing pretty much a lot of the stuff that they wanted. And looking back, we spent 5-6 months of taking away resources, which we had very little of, into just rolling out an enterprise team plan and so on for this one basically company, which they could have just turned around and say, hey, sorry. But the way I looked at it was it's a good risk, because even if that fell through, now we would be able to very quickly go in and migrate and actually roll out team plans and enterprise plans and so on, which we has been great, because that allowed us to now roll that out where there's many companies that are bringing in teams of 3, 5, 10, 25, or whatever.
Yeah, now you guys do have a Teams version. But exactly. From what I understand, this company came in, they ended up becoming like 40% of your revenue. Something like that.
It was like a little less than that, but it was a good chunk.
It was like getting funding. Suddenly a big chunk of revenue is coming into your business, allows you to fund it, but you spent a lot of time building it, and then there were changes at the company. And they came back and said,
they kind of went. It wasn't. There was changes from the management side. They basically started consolidating a lot of products, things that I can't get into and so on. But long story short, they just ditched majority of the products that they had. And they kind of went back to PowerPoint, in essence, and which was very upsetting for some of the decision makers context there that really wanted to stick around with BizMe. And so that's how I know. But yeah, I mean, overnight, that went away. So, however, here's the thing. At that point, we had grown enough where it was no longer, it was still a decent chunk, but it was no longer, a third or, so of that. It was now a fraction of that. And so it was like, that's going to hurt us for a few months before, we make up for that revenue. But it was nice because, it was like a big fat paycheck that you get up front. And this was on for, a couple of years that this occurred, and it was great. I mean, it was almost like getting a, getting an injection in essence. So we're really appreciative of that and being given an opportunity. But it definitely was, I think, good for both sides.
David Hanmeyer Hansen would be proud. Not necessarily that you stopped everything to build for one client, but that you got your funding from your client. All right, I was kind of taking notes here towards the end of the interview, just so I have for myself how you guys got your customers at VizMe. At first, it was you going into meetings, online communities, people were coming, signing up, giving you feedback. There was nothing to buy. Basic stuff, very one-on-one. Yes. Or not one-on-one, let's say one on a few. Then you guys had the embed. So once a VizMe content was created and embedded on a site, it was basically linking back to VizMe. Even if it wasn't embedded on the site, if they were using the free version, the VizMe watermark was there. And so people knew how they created the infographic, for example, and then they came back. Then there was content, and you guys create lots of content, not just about presenting, but also it seems like you go to tools like BuzzSumo, you see what are popular topics that people care about, we're going to create a blog post about that, and you guys can write about any topic, because what you do is you say, look at how well we can tell this story if we have visuals, and by the way, these visuals are created by VizMe. I've seen some of those blogs.
Correct.
What did I miss in here for getting customers, for getting users?
Yeah, so the other part has really been word of mouth. I mean, in fact, going about the part about and the expectation for me early on, and with anyone that creates, there's a B2C side of their tool, like site builders and so on. It says built with this, or MailChimp, the send with MailChimp. We were expecting, hey, there's going to be so millions and millions of people that are going to be embedding this content, and so everybody's going to get. And it was actually very disappointing because there really wasn't that much links and traffic coming in from these embeds. And to this day, it only accounts for a fraction of the traffic that comes, because a lot of people still download, to be honest. They would download for offline use and so on. And a lot of people just strip off the visit. So it's not a huge amount.
It's so easy to get rid of your watermark.
Yeah, it is. It's easy. I mean, well, the watermark you have to download, but I'm talking about the embedding. Embedding is just it's a line of code that you can remove if you decide to, right? We don't want to force it on people if they wanted to remove it. So that part of it was, you know, almost disappointing in that, wow, that's not accounting for each one. So we had to find other ways to do that. And yes, the content has been probably, I was very against investing in content, or you want to call it content marketing, at the beginning, because for those that are listening on that haven't done this, it is a very time consuming thing. You have to spend a lot of time. You have to find the right, you have to become an expert in a certain field and niche. And you have to create the best content that assigns it. And you have to do it for a long time. It will take months before you start seeing results typically. And it's a lot of, miss and shoot as well, because there is content you write and your content could be all great, but really only a few of them are going to give you the maximum, you know, they're going to get viral and so on. It's not always every single time. And but that has a huge return. It becomes evergreen content and it will continue to, it's like a dividend. It keeps giving you dividend for months and months, if not for years, on end. So that's really been valuable for us. But the other part is when we've just asked a lot of people that if you like the tool, just tell other people about it. You know, it's been, and it's gotten to a point where enough people like it that we're getting, inquiries on a daily basis for team accounts and other opportunities. And I'm like, well, how did you hear about us? And the question comes up, well, actually, we were at this event and this client is using your tool and I've never even heard of them. But we go look and we're like, yeah, they're a user. So that part of it, really, I think our biggest asset has become people like the tool enough that they talk about it. And I think for most other brands, that's the same. That is probably our number one converter now.
Okay. But that's less interesting to talk about in an interview, so I don't bring it up and talk about it. But you're right. I see it. By the way, about the content, not only are you guys write about presentations, but you also, as I said, you write about general interest topics. Here's one created by Matt Casey at your company. Fewer flights, bigger delays, and a bad year for JetBlue. 17 charts on the U.S. airline industry in 2017. So he's telling the story of what's happening. Like, point number one, fewer flights. And he's got some text about that. But what my eye goes to is the big graphic that he has showing how flights have gone down since 2010. And by the way, if you look in the bottom right, it says VisMe. More delays, and he's got a graph showing how many delays there are. And by the way, on the bottom right, it shows that this was created via VisMe. That's what we're talking about.
So those types of content is basically original content. We actually, you know, research, spend a lot of effort and time from a data science aspect, and then we visualize them. You look at that post, you know, I mean, we spend a lot of time writing the content after researching it and then putting, and then also we put it in front of the eyes of the relative audience, and those things get picked up. They do picked up over time. We've had posts that, you know, last week just got picked up from a year and a half ago. We wrote something, right? That's really amazing. And those do have a long traction. So people like those graphics and they actually go embed them. So those are not links, but those are watermarks. Yes.
I'm surprised it's not links because you guys are so good at turning those posts into lead magnets. Like on the very bottom, there's a Did You Know box that's so beautifully done. I could read it, but I don't think it's going to carry the emotional impact of the image. It says 90% of all information transmitted to our brains is visual. People remember. And then there's a nice visual showing how much they remember versus what they see. That's another thing that I like about VisMe. Usually if I create a presentation, I have to go into some frickin' tool to go and create a bar chart. I'll open up a spreadsheet and then I'll embed the graph. With you guys, I could just drag a graph onto my spreadsheet and then tell it what the number should be and then just be done and move on.
Yeah, I mean, you can even connect it to live data. A lot of people don't know that.
I don't even want to do that. Sometimes I just want to say 70, like what you guys did here. People remember 80% of what they see, 20% of what they read. I go and create freaking a spreadsheet just for that.
Yeah. So the way we looked at it is two ways. There is heavy data visualization, which we have charts, you know, and graphs for. And then we have all these widgets that are related to VisMe, these little tiny stats and figures, you know, pictographs and so on, arrays of data, populations. They're just drag and drop. So 80%, 70%, 30%, or 300, you know, small numbers that you can just stack together. They're not always charts. So we wanted to kind of find a balance between that.
All right. The website for anyone who wants to check it out is VisMe.co. And the two sponsors I'm looking, by the way, at Built With. Do you use geeky tools like this? I just can't stop researching people. You know, let's just end this with a couple of tools. I've read that you've got some interesting tools. Built With BuiltWith.com. I know I'm running late here. I'm sorry. I can't let you go. BuiltWith.com I use to research people's websites. SimilarWeb to see where they get their traffic. Yeah. Obviously, archive.org to see what the site used to look like. Here's one that's golden for me. Take an email address of someone that you're trying to research. Put it into People. Do you know People? PIPL.com. You put it in there, you get their freaking age, you get where they live. I'm put Andrew at my email in. I should just grab your email address, but it's not handy. It gives me links to their LinkedIn profile, their Facebook profile, their family members. It's freaking creepy, but it's good. Is there a tool that you use for business that helps you for research, for anything?
We do use BuzzSumo, Ahrefs. We use that a lot. Google Search, of course, but BuzzSumo and the Ahrefs are a big
part. They're going to be a sponsor.
Yeah, that's great.
Wait, it's AR. It's I thought it was
Ahrefs. Have a hard time saying it. Ahrefs. I always have a hard time.
Their name just is so annoying. Yeah. But it's a great freaking tool. I was just talking to Rand Fishkin. He said they basically helped crush him.
For those listening, actually, the Rand Fishkin's book, the new one that came out, Lost and Founder, you got to read that. Anyone who's in it. And it really goes into, and again, I'm not trying to, it's a tool. I'm actually on chapter, I don't know, 8 or 9. But it's a great book for anyone that's
with you.
Read it. Yeah, great read.
I've got a good interview with him coming up. And I said to him, look, this is a great book, but no one's going to expect it because they think you're either going to talk about marketing or you're going to talk about the head game of entrepreneurship. I thought it was about lost like being depressed and founder meaning find yourself. No, it's about, hey, I have nothing to lose, guys. Let me tell you what sucks and what's real.
Boom. Yeah.
Good choice.
To a good level. Exactly.
All right, guys, go check it out, vizme.co. And my two sponsors that I want to thank are HostGator for hosting websites. Check them out at HostGator.com/Mixergy. And if you want to hire a finance person or a developer, go to TopTal.com/Mixergy. Man, this was a good interview. I kept you on way longer than we expected.
That's okay. Apologies for that phone, man. I turned a. It's the weirdest thing I have to figure out because I turned a Bluetooth on and still went off. It's odd.
So wait, why are you Bluetoothing it into your computer?
It just because in my car I have a Bluetooth and so it just connects directly to my laptop. I have to go through the settings and turn it off.
Weird. I wouldn't even understand why I would do that. But okay.
Well, I guess and maybe now I'm thinking about it, maybe it's not a Bluetooth. Maybe it's connecting through something else. But anyway.
Oh, I know what it is. It's you say on your computer that you can take phone calls from because you have a Mac computer and you have an iPhone and you can say I want my calls to come through the computer. That happens to me. Yes, you're right.
I have to turn that off.
Settings. Yeah, I don't even know how to turn that off because that hardly ever happens. All right. Anyway, thank you so much for doing this interview. Thank you all for listening.